Hey, morning, David. Morning, panel. Morning, all of our listeners. Very excellent contributions from everyone who went so far. And I think if you piece together all the things that have been said, we actually understand, we have a very good understanding of where we are, what are the root causes, and even some of the solutions. Where we fall down, obviously, would be in the implementation of those solutions. When you ask the question, how I've seen this change, is a very interesting question. In coming up, I started a group as a teenager, and as a teenager, we would have been told a particular set of things. And I ask anybody on this panel, what is a man? But what is a male? What is a man? It is one of those difficult questions for people to answer many times. So coming up, you would have heard, you don't hate the female. A man is somebody who takes responsibility, protector, that type of thing. And you had that as an understanding. Now, many feminists will tell you that the socialization of the male to make him a man is what is very problematic. Makes him believe that he must be dominant, must be in charge, must be the head, must be the leader. And this has created a patriarchy in the society, as the theorists would call it. Now, we have seen that shift to where we are today. Even within my own microcosm of my organization, working with many young males, and even going over even to doing something with you here at the University of West Indies recently, the young people coming up now, they do not hold to the things of generation past, where a man is the person who's supposed to buy the meal at a date or dinner. They were very surprised at some of the questions I was given to ask them in relation to this whole idea of gender equality. They were like, what are you talking about? We're not even aware of these differentials that y'all have been imposed to y'all in generations past. So there's been a significant shift even in the psyche. I remember something that Tony said. Many people are convinced by reason, but they are moved by emotion. We operate by emotion. A lot of the time when you look in generation past, although we were being told certain things, our examples were fundamentally different. We saw a position, I don't know about you guys, but I saw a position when my grandfather and my uncle, when they came home, the food had to be on their table or it was problematic. Today you don't see that. And I want to take this time even to salute a lot of the younger generation and these men and these fathers playing an increased role in their children's life. By all observation, by all research, you are seeing a lot of the younger males playing the role of fathers in a greater way. Stop and salute these things. I want to wrap up my part on the question you asked, David, in terms of the younger generation too, in always reminding people that when we're talking about these subjects, we're not talking about a homogenous group. There are differences in generation, differences in class, in terms of, we like to split humanity into the smallest bits and pieces, race, class, gender, whatever. We like to split it up. What I've observed is that within the middle class and the working class, we've seen a shift of men slaying, losing ground. Feminists hate to hear it. They say we're losing dominance and we are afraid. But in the business class and in the wealth class, I haven't seen that type of movement. You still maintain a city wealth class, mainly men on the golf course, investment, stuff like that. But where we see the examples of the leaders within the society and the civil service, the permanent secretaries, the head teachers, the whatever profession or career you look to, you see that the women are really in the persons making the shift upward, while the men are making the shift backward. I am one that believes that anytime you come with a solution, you must be heading towards equality. And equality does not mean that you leave out one for the other. It means that different sections of society need different levels of help. So the help must be proportional to the problem. And I think that's where we run into a lot of problems. Where some people say we have men going to prison, we got men not getting in school, too bad for them. The females need help in X place. It can't be a zero-sum game. It must be a game where we see that each of them will need the help and that we apportion that help in a proportional manner.
Well, we have established a lot of what is wrong. The question is trying to correct it. For quite some time, we've spoken about these issues, but what can we do to make a real difference? Perhaps I should come back to Tony Oulton to get his perspective on the steps that need to be taken in Barbados right now to see to what extent we can improve on this situation. That is perhaps,
I just want to highlight something that is very, very important that Mr. Marshall said. He talked about value. And for me, I want to highlight my example, my experience with this. A lot of the times we work with at-risk youth. And when you give them that value, that affirmation, that ability where they can see themselves back on the fan of the month, jockey of the month, these different things, and they get that value, you see a fundamental 180 turn where they go from being at-risk youth to citizens of excellence, leading in their spheres of life. So if we want to start with the solution-oriented, that is one I want to highlight and underscore coming from Mr. Marshall.
Corey, I can add to that. One of the challenges that we have, and that I realize even worker young people, myself and men generally, is that we don't validate. I mean, and this is just to cement your point. You know, I mean, very seldom somebody tell a man good job for doing something. We had a men's group last night, and one of the younger guys turned and said, "But you don't congratulate a fish for swimming." You know what I mean? I was like, "Hey, but you don't understand that." You know, we need to validate our men. We need to let men know that, like, you're doing a good job. International men's, they're just gone. And it was so difficult for persons to accept that men can be celebrated. Listen, every time, every discussion I had with persons, it always went to the direction of the negative. But men this, but men that. And then I got to say, yes, but we also have good men that need to be celebrated. Men like Corey Lane. You know, let me celebrate a Corey Lane that influencing a lot of these young men in a real positive way. Let us celebrate Tony Orton, you know. And that is what we need to do. We are not all bad. You know, and that is it. Validate men. It can't be that difficult, I think.
Well, that's an important point that you make, which is a culture of negativity, which also breeds more negative behavior, more negative thoughts. Gerald Walker, let me see if your mic is working at this stage. Can you? No, it isn't working. Something is wrong with you.
It's still working.
It's not working. All right. I'm going to take a call. I think we've had some people waiting for quite a while. Sorry to keep you waiting so long. Welcome to Dr. Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Welcome, Brass Tacks.
How are you doing?
I'm well.
Yeah, I agree. I want to be quick and swift. I agree with a lot with Corey and the Altram and the Sergeant guy. He must also announce where he's been being held. First thing first, I heard everybody speak, but no one look at the spiritual side of where we are. I think that we are being let down in our society.
By whom?
By our leaders in the church and those we put in parliament. And our educational system, as the guys say, we have missed our spiritual guide. We lost, I think I hear Dennis did this already a couple of years ago. Our spiritual side of society are almost gone. We have children in school who don't know the Lord's Prayer, and these are values that David, you would know, we came along with. We know that society have changed and technology and all these things come into play. But we are losing a lot of moral guidance in our society, in our educational system. We have almost taken, you know, a lot of biblical things that we take out of the schools. I'm not saying that, you know, we don't have, you know, other people don't have other way of doing their spiritual guidance. We have all kinds of different religions. But I recognize in society, I can't see any religious group in society that teaches violence.
Well, sorry, I really want to challenge your thoughts on this because there are a lot of people and children who are being exposed to religious teaching and religious thought at an early age in school. However, after a certain stage, they lose interest. And you are putting the blame on the religious leaders and all sorts of people, but you seem to ignore the fact that this society has created something of a drift away from religion for some people because based upon what they have experienced, what they've seen, it has not been able to draw them to it.
I would further make the point, David. I understand that. We know that a lot of our youngsters came to church and then you would break away. But if you have that moral guidance and that spiritual guidance, there's a lot of things that we will do. You hear Corey say, you can take young men, and if you got that, you can train them, you can tell them and give them ideas. You know what Sergeant say, or what Austin say, if you give them something to hold on to and let them know. But we are missing it in our spirituality. You know, the church, one thing, the church was part of the school. The church had influence. You had a good church, Good Friday. You know, these things, I'm not saying everybody would do it, but there was a certain amount of spiritual guidance. And those in authority, if you look from our ministers, that over, a lot of them are over 40 or 45, they came along with their moral guidance with the church, their spiritual guidance. We have lost it, David, in our spiritual side. As you say, you know, when you get a certain age, you move away. I have moved away from Christianity too, but then you find ways and means, there are things and ways that you learn that will bring you back. As I tell you, I don't see no religion that teaches that violence and that negative.
Well, let me get a comment here from Dr. Let me get a comment here from Dr. Ian Marshall on the point. Because you assert that there's been this removal of spiritual, religious education and that sort of stuff from the school, but I'm not so sure how accurate that is. Dr. Marshall?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, David. You are correct that why we accept that because of the changing value system and the emphasis on giving everyone a voice, so to speak, there is not that rigid adherence to that spiritual standard that we had before. But within schools, we still have a certain level of spirituality, even if it's not done in the way that it was done previously. It is still there, and there are still persons in the school, teachers, etc., that will be able to influence children in a positive way. But the other point you have to recognize, David, and I am a father of three children, and the reality is, all my children were raised in the church. But I am saying that even though that they are now becoming teenagers, you have to recognize that when children become teenagers, they have to decide for themselves what road they will travel. And even if you when they are young, they will be listening to you and they will be hearing what you say, because again, they are in that space where they are children. But once they become teenagers, you have to recognize that every teenager has to find his or her own way in the world. And you have to can't be about forcing them to do anything anymore. It's what they have to make the choice. And that is why you see, for example, when they are young, they will be going to church because they have to do it. But then there comes a phase where they themselves acknowledge, okay, do I really want to go the road of Christianity, or do I want to go another way? And therefore, that is where you see what people call the fall in a way. But that is not the fall of the church, because that's just a function of the natural progress of maturation, basically. So that is where you have to separate. You can't force people even to serve God once they become adults. They have to choose. And once you give people choice, you have to acknowledge that choice means they can walk away if they so desire. And that is the reality.
Can I
see that as a parent?
I agree with you there, sir. We know that we cannot force people. But what I'm saying is that we know we have teachers in church who are in schools who have spiritual guidance, who try. But what I'm saying is that we miss it when we, in the authority, don't try to put more a rigid program in schools. You don't have no Christians organizations.
But that's the issue there, a rigid program. How
David?
Rigid is rigid, yes.
David?
Tony Olton.
Yeah, I want to pull back. I want to pull back because it's easy to do that. It is easy to point blame at the church. There's an understanding that how we present as adults, 50% of that, the way we think, the way we feel, and the way we function, the way we think about ourselves, how we get our needs met, how we engage others, our place in the world, 50% of that is in place by the time we are 2 years old. Most of that child's life, if not all, has been spent in the presence of some adult, typically a family member, mother, father, aunt, grandmother, somebody. 85% of how we present as adults is in place by the time we are 7 years old. And so my greatest way of teaching as a parent is not what I say. It's not sending my child to Sunday school. My greatest witness is how I function. It's how I live my life.
Correct.
It is how I engage others. It is how I treat their mothers or their mother. It is how they see me engaging family members. It is how they see me keeping my word.
So true.
It is the priorities I have in my life. You know, all of my children are grown. They're in their 20s. Two of them used my car yesterday, and they said I needed to leave by 1 o'clock. And they were back by 12:45. And I took the time to say, you know, I want to honor this. I want to honor you for keeping your word. Mm-hmm. Because what I've learned in life is that the only thing you really have in life is your reputation,
integrity.
Your trustworthiness, your integrity.
Correct.
And so I used that example yesterday, that opportunity yesterday to reinforce a particular lesson. So the point I'm really making is, how much of what we want to see in our children have we ourselves been manifesting in our homes? What do they see of us? You know, there's the old joke of, you know, the itinerant sales move comes around on Sundays, and you whip your child by saying, you know, you must always tell the truth. You must always tell the truth. When the itinerant sales move comes by, tell you that I ain't home. That is a lesson by itself.
Yeah, negative.
And so we have to stop blaming the church and all these people outside of ourselves, and as parents, ask ourselves, what have I done? How have I contributed to the mindset and to the behaviors that my children are engaging in? I come home and I'm tired, and I let them do their own thing in front of the television. I've lost those 2-3 hours to have influence in their lives. I know they have all kinds of influences. And so part of the challenge our young people have is that they have all of this influence, all this access to knowledge and information, but they have no filters to figure out what allows me to be effective and what takes away from my effectiveness. So a lot of this responsibility starts with us as parents in our homes. What are our values, and how are we transmitting those values into our children?
But a lot of parents don't know how to do that. So how do you create an environment where they are taught?
And so part of what has to happen, in my judgment, is a significant national initiative that begins to message and begins to demonstrate that there's another way to think, to feel, and to act, another way to see yourselves. Because at the end of the day, as human beings, we are essentially constructed with the same needs, the need for belonging, the need to be appreciated, the need to be loved, the need to be respected. If we can begin a national program that teaches and reinforces at the same level that we teach academic and technical vocational training, if we now can move social and emotional learning to that higher level in our educational system, we can go some significant distance. Also supporting parenting programs, helping people already parents to understand how they can reorganize their thinking, reorganize how they function, so that they too can be more effective, because they're looking for answers. They just don't have anywhere to turn, or they don't feel they have anywhere to turn. They don't feel like they have answers readily available to them.
Imran Richards, you just joined us from church, right? Turn on your mic.
Yes, I have.
Yes, what are your thoughts? I mean, you've come a long way in this society. You're one of the people who has been transformed in a real sense, coming out of what you might have done and experienced as a very young person. From where you sit, what are you hearing from men about their situation and what needs to be done?
Yeah, I think a lot of what was said really reinforces a lot of the experiences that I have had, specifically as I navigate the secondary school system as well as the prison system, where I work with those individuals who have been at risk or prone to crime, violence, and behaviors associated with such. I'll give you one quick example. In the prison program that we currently undertake, we work with those who've been accused of fairly aggravated type crimes, murder, aggravated robbery, and so forth. And 95% of those individuals who are a part of our program speak to the issue of fatherlessness as a major contributing factor to why they believe that they ended up in a position of deviance. And I think it's really important to underscore that from 0 to 5 years old, those are the years that psychologists usually refer to as the mother impact years. As a matter of fact, your brain begins to develop to the degree that you receive some level of nurturing and so forth from your mother. 6 to 11 constitute the years that the father has a significant impact on the life of the child in terms of helping them to understand their core, in terms of their identity and so forth. So from 0 to 11 years old, the family plays a significant contributing role in the development of the value system, of the way that we see ourselves, everything that Mr. Olton was just speaking to. Here's the challenge, is that when you reach the age from 12 to 19 years old, as we all are aware, those are the peer and peers. In other words, what is now important to you is not necessarily what mommy and daddy had to see, but what will my peers make my decisions and so forth. And if you did not have a solid foundation from 0 to 11, if he wasn't modeling the value he wanted for you to see and so forth, then you are no surrendered to the culture of secondary school. You are no surrendered to the culture of your community and all of the popular philosophies that flaunt themselves related to what it means to be a man. This idea that men need to be macho, men cannot cry, and men solve problems with violence. You know, men are supposed to wear their pants a certain way below their waist and so forth. The popular thinking that doesn't require you to think at all, but just really kind of follow blindly the crowd in order to fit in, that begins to dominate your reality, and that is what you give yourself to. And that's why I would want to say in relation to what Mr. Marshall would have mentioned, I think that parenting specifically in this day and age needs to take into consideration the various phases of life that our children are going through, so that as they reach teenage years, we know that, yes, we may have a different type of influence, but now we need to think, how can I facilitate conversation and dialogue with my children in such a way that I still steer them in the right direction, as opposed to surrendering them to, you know, well, they now have to make their own choices. How can I help them to make better choices? And many young men are missing that. And there's a story about this eagle that essentially grew up on a chicken farm. And the eagle saw chickens day after day picking the ground, scratching for grain. And that is the exact behavior that the eagle adopted until one day it saw other eagles in the sky flying. What was the tragedy about that particular story is that other eagles were missing. And so the eagle patterned its life after what it was able to see. I think one of the major problems that we have in Barbadian society today is that so many young men do not have an accurate picture of manhood, of what it means to be a real man. They don't have an accurate picture to see of, this is what I am supposed to look like. And so we have a bunch of individuals who are supposed to be eagles, created to fly, but their environment has conditioned them pretty grown. And so I think that's one of the major challenges that we have, is the issue of fatherlessness.
Are you seeing any success in the initiatives that have been taken in recent years, though?
Specifically related to the programs that we undertake?
Yes.
Yes. So we have right now, we had one class, the very first class that we did, we had 16 individuals who were committed to that particular program. 14 of those individuals today, I think there are about 12 that are still incarcerated. 4 of them are out, and this is 2 years later, all 4 of them are working. We are still in contact with all 4 of them. They're working, they're contributing to society, and they've kept themselves out of trouble. The other 12 still continue to be a part. We didn't even facilitate this. We only understood this recently, that 12 of those individuals who were part of the first program still continue to meet on their own, either over Bible study, because religion was a part of what we did. They continue to meet over Bible study, or they continue to meet and just go back over the material that we would have discussed with them 2 years later. Some of them have even gone on to join other programs and are becoming model citizens. We have one particular case. This was the very last program, the last cohort of individuals that went through our program. This young man was in prison for murder, accused of shooting someone in the back of their heads. And when he came to our program, he said, we use sports as a vehicle for transformation. And so he said, I am only here because I was sent to this program. I am not interested in changing. I am going to be a thug for the rest of my life. And he declared his hand at the very, very first day by the end of our 16-week program, he was the person delivering the what you would refer to as the valedictorian type speech, and brought everybody in the room to a place of tears. Week four in the program, he came to me, he said, Imran, if you want to change, do you really think that it is possible? Because my past is so horrible, I am not certain that change is possible. But because he was surrounded by individuals that believed in him, all of a sudden we began to see him speaking in completely different language. And point where I never had individuals who believed in him and made him feel a sense of belonging like this program would have done. Many of us want our young people to behave before they belong. I think that they need belonging first. Behavior will follow.
I totally agree with that, Imran. Even in my day-to-day work, with young people, you know, these youngsters just want to feel belong and love before you throw anything at them. They want to feel accepted. They want to feel as if, you know, I am worth something. And that is where the value, trying to get these guys to a sense where they value themselves, where they try to look deep inside, regardless of what their past had for them or what they would have done. You know, one thing I gather from my good friend Tony is that every moment in our life is a moment of choice. And that is one of the things that I push to these young people. Let them know that every moment in your life is a moment of choice. You can choose to do well, or you can choose not to do well. It is entirely up to you, but people like me, people like us, must create that environment for them to want to feel as if they can do well. So I think that is where we play a part. And oftentimes, these type of discussions, of which I am usually a part of, I like to ask everybody, so what part do you play in the equation? Because we usually sit and we talk about men. What are the men doing? And most of the things they're talking about the other men outside, you know, as opposed to personalizing it and seeing where exactly you fit in that equation. And that is exactly what I do. I always see where I fit in the equation. How can I make an impact? How does my actions look towards the young men that are looking on to me for that guidance or that role model type of personality? And I have to lift the suit, because who are they going to follow if we don't set the examples? You know, all the negative, it's easy to follow negative, but we must create that positive environment for them to want to follow.
We get some reaction to all that has been said so far, as we remind you that this edition of Brass Tax Sunday comes to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Who's got conduits, fittings, dimmers, switches, ballasts, bells and brackets? We do. Williams. Who does wiring, installations, maintenance for homes and business? We do. Williams. From electrical contracting and maintenance to consumer products, Williams Electrical should be your first stop for all things electrical, including UL-approved products of proven quality. Who's got the know-how just for you? Electrify service, do we do?